Double Neck Download is streaming live to our YouTube channel. I'm Richard Hunter. That is Hal Sparks winning the green screen contest for today.
Green screen, excuse me. This is a full-size painting I had commissioned. I was, you know, everybody's learning their quarantine skill, and I've been working on my photorealistic painting.
Yeah.
So I was really inspired by the movie Xanadu. And and the fact that the main character, played by the guy from the Warriors, I forget his name right now, who was an album painter, remember that? That was his job. He took regular album covers and he painted them on giant billboards.
Yeah,
he was a he saw a girl on the beach and it was roller skating Olivia Newton-John, and she was suddenly on an album cover and nobody could figure out where she came from. And they tried to write her a check as a model and they couldn't track her down. And then he tracks her down and she's dancing with Gene Kelly in an abandoned club on PCH.
That is a much better, that is a much better recall of the film than I have.
Dude, I love that movie. I mean, A, because it came out right as the time I had a huge crush on Olivia Newton-John, like a big dumb crush. And, you know, a kid crush.
Yeah.
And the album, interestingly enough, and I don't know how many people remember, but the record was half Olivia Newton-John, half ELO. So the front, if you bought the LP of Xanadu, which I did, the A side is Olivia Newton-John, or no, the A side is ELO, and the B side is Olivia Newton-John songs.
That's interesting. I didn't know any. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of songs that, you know, like I'm Alive and all those kind of things, the ELO tunes that came from it, they were just on one side of the record and they weren't intermingled like they were in the record. They didn't go. That was clearly some sort of contract negotiation at the barrel of a gun.
Right. You
know, on, and I don't know who won or who lost in this argument, but yeah.
That's like a, it's like at the concept of doing a split single, but a split album.
Totally.
With a band.
Yeah. Dude, it was like, yeah, it was an A-side, B-side, 45, just 33 speed and the full record.
Yeah.
But in many ways, because I mean, it was probably when I was 10, maybe 11 years old when that movie came out. It was genuinely my first experience with ELO songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because so people write off a lot of those sort of silly movies like the Sgt. Pepper movie that the Bee Gees did and stuff like that. But if you're in an age range where you're 8 to 10 years old, that might be the first time you hear that music. And then you go back and you discover it.
Yeah.
You know, in the case of ELO, it's really them. That helps.
No, that's true. And it's kind of like, that's what I always think of when I see people talking about Kiss's Dynasty album, because I think there's kind of a dynasty movement, because it's like for a lot, and I understand, you know, for people who are a little bit older than us, they had already been Kiss fans long enough that Dynasty was a disruption to them. But for me, even though it wasn't, I mean, I had all the records up to that point before Dynasty came out. That was my, as I think about it, I think that was my first, like, new release Kiss album. You know what I mean? Like, the one that came out and I got that day and all that kind of stuff. And it was my first tour to see. So, you know, there's a whole generation of people who, as soon as somebody starts saying, I'm actually going to use the phrase Kiss purist, start saying, you know, well, wait a second, that was the dawning of the disco era. There's also a whole bunch of people that are very quick to say, well, wait a second, I understand it was a little different, but that was my real-time foray. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That was, yeah.
And a lot of times it was, you know, looking back, it's more of a production difference than it was a style difference. But they had not settled on, I mean, I think for a lot of people, Destroyer was the settled sound, finally.
Mm-hmm.
The first three records, there was a lot of, you know, Hotter Than Hell and Dressed to Kill and the original album, there was a lot of thinness to those records.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they were sonically very thin.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Destroyer came along and filled out the sound, and beefed the guitars up, and you had, you know, layering the bass notes with piano keys, those mm-hmm. that kind of sonic trickery to give some heft, then Dynasty sonically felt like a step back because it was pop mixing, much like Crazy Nights is pop mixing compared to Animalize or Asylum or Lick It Up, for that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you're aiming towards radio from an old radio ear kind of a way, the guitars get thinner, the bass tends to be brought up and washes a little more. The drums have, you know, and the drum and vocal, like the snare and the vocal, you can hear when you'd have the music turned almost all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of mixing tricks
mm-hmm.
that are lost in metal, you know, and how it's mixed a lot of times, because there's a homogeny to the sonic mix because you're supposed to grab it all. Uh-oh, mm-hmm. Are you in a haunted house now?
No. No, I was just getting a little off-camera cue from house producer. You're all good.
Gotcha. I thought it was the opening of God of Thunder.
Yeah.
Or the closing, the beginning or the ending of God of Thunder, but which you did with perfect timing, by the way. So, yeah, sonically, there's a lot of that is of issue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think Dynasty felt like a dismissal. But if you listen, you know, I remember hearing – I Was Made for Loving You was, in many ways, as a 10-year-old, my first Metallica-like riff. First chugging guitar I ever heard in a song was from I Was Made for Loving You.
Yeah, okay. I could see that. Yeah, right.
Live, mm-hmm. It sounds incredibly heavy comparatively. You know.
Yeah, if
and
you...
Little, yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say...
Mm-hmm. You were going to say that you froze, what you were going to say. You're going to say that you're freezing, frozenness.
Okay, hang on. Are we back? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you took out the disco drum beat, yeah.
And you gave it a harder snare.
Yes, it would be exactly what you're describing. You know, it's kind of like... I mean, for I don't know if we've discussed my musical background on this show, but so the band I spent the most time in was, for most intents and purposes, a bluegrass band, but it had a drummer. And when you had drums,
bluegrass band, for those at home who are, you're a little choppy right now, and I think it's because the dog is probably playing Animal Farm or whatever that is. Animal Crossing.
But we had a drummer, and when drums to bluegrass, it becomes grass.
Yeah,
you're like, this is like, you know, we were able to play rocks with that because all of a sudden, you know, you've got like a thrash type beat.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's kind of interesting how the song as a whole, or the production as a whole, or the band as a whole takes the brunt of this. Oh, the entire thing is going in a different direction, when really you can isolate one aspect of it and go subtract this, and it's actually very different than what you're thinking it is.
Right. And I'm much more forgiving when you make an artistic choice as a band to go, we want this album to sound like this. Which mm-hmm. is what the case is in the case of Dynasty. It's what the case is in the case of Unmasked, The Elder, Crazy Nights, even Revenge or whatever. Like, they're making distinct choices. The band was making choices about how they wanted to sound. They mm-hmm. weren't confused about what they sounded like. They were trying to create what they wanted to hear,
mm-hmm.
the kind of music
mm-hmm.
they wanted to make. Unlike some other artists who think their mix is heavy, and it's really their... messing it up.
Mm-hmm.
I would, you know, I'm a big fan of Wasp, you know that, and Still Not Black Enough is one of my favorite albums from Wasp. But I don't know if Blackie's, if he and the engineer, maybe his front of house sound guy was doing the mixing, but it's one of the tinniest records you'll ever hear. But you can clearly see that they feel like they're under the they seem to be believing that it's a heavy sounding record to them. The way the instrumentation is, all that stuff, it's just really tiny sounding compared to what's really there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mistake. Like, it should be mixed fuller. The guitars are there. You can tell from the mix, the sounds they have to work with that are in on tape or in the recording are present and as loud as you would need them to be to mix a really heavy record. But it just sounds like it's bottlenecked through a tweeter. And I find that's more of a mistake than people who go, I want this album to sound like this. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants their album to sound like that. They think their album sounds like something else, and they, because of their ears are screwed or something. So I never had a problem with. And that was the thing with Dynasty. But go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
No, I was just going to let everybody know that such is the fluidity of the Double Neck Download. We had not intended to start with
let everybody know that.
I'm echoing back. There we go. With a production analysis, but that's what we do here. Never know when that's going to break out.
Yeah, it's always going to roll back to a rating of Kiss albums and how they sonically work out. No question. That said, we were going to talk about, and I think it's important to talk about, the state of live music.
Yes.
In the world of of COVID-19. I've decided I'm going to start a new band called Potential Spam.
And
I
would get calls from you guys all the time.
That's right. Yeah, we have the best outreach in the world.
Yeah.
My other side project, Unknown.
Good one.
Potential Spam and the Unknown.
I know someone who had a similar idea about going by the name Many More, because Many More is added to so many bills. Yeah, they'd be very busy.
There was a band in L.A. called the Post Nobles at one point. And their logo was Post No Bills.
When you saw that
on construction sites or whatever, they were like, which I never got. Like, I get it if you have artwork up.
Yeah.
If you have like Post No Bills as a sign in front of it. If you have like a picture, this is what the building's going to look like. But if it's a bunch of plywood, it's kind of cool to have a bunch of band posters and shit up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go by there and somebody put something racist and nasty up, tear it down, spray over it. You know what I mean? But like, bands will do that for you. If you come up and you're putting up band posters and some assholes put up some sort of, sexist, bigoted, riotous monstrosity, throw your poster up over it and everybody will love you for it. That in and of itself, I always hated, but they were called the Post Nobles.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But so here, and the Post Nobles would be doing great, by the way.
Yeah.
The prevailing situation for live music and in many ways, live comedy, any kind of live performance, was slowly on a downward track. For the last 5 years, there were some mega tours, and it really did aim at why there were so many This Is the End tours, I think.
Mm.
It's not because bands couldn't continue to roll on like the Rolling Stones, which is they're always on an end tour because they're like so friggin' old, you figure this might be my last chance no matter when you see them. So everybody does that. Like, they're just going to tour forever. Like, yeah, but they might kick off. Holy shit. They might just puff and turn into dust at some point.
Hey, my suggestion to get around all this criticism about the retirement tours, then you come out of retirement, all that. Don't call it that. Just call it the imminent collapse tour. Right. And the only promise is this: look, we're going to keep this thing going for as long as we can. But at this point, something could blow up in the blink of an eye. And you may want to be there because we're not sure if it's going to be the day after we come to your town. Just try to fit all that onto a poster. There's nothing that implies false advertising about that.
I would argue that has a lot to do with the bullshit stories about like artists who are on the edge or falling apart or dying of drug overdoses and all that kind of stuff, when obviously they had the means and wherewithal to sit through a recording process, a mixing process, a track choice meeting, album artwork they signed off on. You know, they managed to do all that, but no, he's going to be dead any day now. You know, 6 years later, any day now, they put out, you know, three more albums.
Yeah.
So there's something to, like, the news about that, you know, being a marketing ploy in a lot of ways to get you to go see him live, to get mm-hmm. you off your ass, to buy the record, because, you know, this might be the last record they make. You know, and it was pre-digital download that had a huge effect on things, because if they stopped printing them because the band died, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I saw Kiss right before they shut, you know, this whole thing down. And the one upside I see for performers and musicians of all sorts is that I don't see people taking live shows for granted the way they used to.
Yeah.
For the last, you know, 5 years, this is the last time we're going to see these guys. You know, they're going to quit touring. We might as well get up off our lazy ass, get out of the house and go see something, stop Netflixing and chilling our life away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep seeing all these pictures of the year 1920, right after the Spanish flu.
Mm-hmm.
And the streets are friggin' packed. And they're having ticker tape parades and Macy's balloons, and all these people are just out in public like nuts. And I feel like that's part of the natural psychological response to it, you know?
Yeah.
But who benefits right away? You had a theory about who's going to benefit, you know, earlier than that. Because I think a year from now, that'll be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Oh, it's like the venues that will open first, obviously.
Oh, clubs. Yeah. So my thought is this, and this actually doubles down nicely with a story about Anvil. Everybody loves Anvil. That they're going to stream a live show in July in Quebec City. And they were talking to the Metal Voice about this. Now, you know, you first hear this and you think, okay, well, you know, the return of Anvil in terms of marketing impact is not exactly what's going to become of the Motley Crue, Def Leppard co-headlining tour. And that's true. But, I mean, not only the last time I saw Anvil, the last couple of times, anytime I've ever seen Anvil, really, it's always in a room that, you know, can comfortably hold maybe 300 people, and you could jam maybe four in there if you had to. But that's the, you know, if you're a band that's got big stage production and you play a venue that's even the size of like a House of Blues, for example, it's going to still look a little empty. It's going to still look a little sound check-ish, you know, right, when you're playing, to say the least. But if you're a 3-piece band like Anvil without a lot of stage production and pyrotechnics and all that, and you're used to playing small club, small stage anyway, you're going to have a shorter distance to transition in terms of when you put your production on. I'm not going to have to adjust nearly as much as I would if I'm seeing Motley Crue in that same kind of scenario. So, silver lining limited upside to being a band on the level of Anvil. They could be, you know, they could ride a wave of being the first bands back and enjoy the headlines and the press coverage that's going to come with it. Because, you know, it's same thing with any of the other businesses that are reopening. Which ones are going to reopen first? Well, you know, why is a hair salon reopening before a live venue? It's because you're only dealing with a few customers at a time in a small space as opposed to a giant mass gathering. Same principle applies.
Yeah. Well, and also, you're not going to judge half full clubs the way you used to. Instead of going, Jesus, this nobody's here. You know, people are going to go, sweet, nobody's here. Like, there's an element of like, if you're, you know, if they're doing social distancing, you can go, well, we didn't turn many people out. So, well, you know, like startup bands and smaller groups are going to have, you know, a sort of a safety margin around them that no, you know, that bigger bands don't have, or that cut into how much they're expecting to make most nights,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that kind of stuff. So, and venues are going to be so hungry for performers because they're, you know, there'll be a lot of competition for thinner and thinner crowds. Ticket prices will go way through the roof. It'll be like seeing a private show of one of your favorite artists, you know?
Well, that raises another question. So this is going to be, one, it'll be a great opportunity. We talked about this before about how, you know, the old excuse for why you're having to play smaller venues is I wanted to get closer to the fans. I wanted to have a more intimate experience. Well, now you can actually adjust it to, hey, you know, we're taking safety into consideration here, which is great. But that
get farther away from the fans.
Yeah. And it'll also, we've talked before about how this is going to, you know, give rise to the residency and things like that. But I think it is going to pose an interesting conundrum for bigger bands. Meaning, yes. If we're a band that already commands, you know, $100 ticket, are we going, let's take the residency. I mean, because you could do this with a residency and make it work. But let's say you're not going to do the residency. Let's say you're somehow going to try to do some semblance of a tour. If you're used to charging an $800 ticket and drawing, you know, maybe upwards of 10,000 people, are you going to be okay with saying, okay, we're going to space people far enough apart that we're only going to be able to draw maybe 20% of our potential? And then if that's the case, are we going to stick to the $100 ticket, you know, or are we going to do something like, you know, charge $500 and, you know, make it like a VIP type thing, but also risk. I could see a real potential backlash there of, you know, being looked at as, oh man, at a time like this, you're doing something like that. I mean, it's not going to be a black and white situation because I'm going to be able to look at that band and go, okay, yeah, but if you want the show they're used to putting on, it takes massive production. I mean, they've got to make that amount of money for a reason to be able to put it on.
Sell, it's like Cirque du Soleil tickets for that kind of level. I will say some bands in the mid zone who could come to like, you know, places like the Roxy in LA or the, you know, the Fonda Theater, you know, medium to slightly larger size, like House of Blues size places. There's a couple of things they can do. Instead of moving on in one night, they do two nights in a row and shorter sets. So you're basically doing two sets like the Beatles used to do when they were woodshedding in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, you come in and instead of doing one big 90-minute show, you're doing 2 hours that night with a break in between and they roll the audience in. And, you know what I mean?
That's interesting.
You know, and so you're splitting the audience between, you can see the A show and the B show. And then the next night you can see the B show and the A show. You know, and if you wanted to go twice, you can. If you can't, you're seeing an hour, it's live. You're seeing pretty much just the hits. You know, you could have an A show with the hits and a B show with the deep tracks, and the real fans can come to B, and the, you know, the like fans from the radio can come to the A show. There's ways to do it if you're Friday and Saturday nighting at someplace like that, you know, and pulling crowd, and then you've got multiple people. You're basically getting that money that you're talking about setting up from fans that decide to see both shows.
So really kind of like what Kiss does on the cruise, you know, they play a couple of shows, you get tickets to one, you choose which one to go to. I think you can, I don't know if you can, in the past you could upgrade that situation to go to both. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sure. You, all you had to do was have a quick word with Gene Simmons. Well, speaking of Kiss, former Kiss guitarist, Bruce Kulick, gave an interview talking about how, you know, Bruce is 66 years old himself. And he was talking about how, you know, this may cause some older musicians to retire earlier than they planned. I mean, in other words, by the time this whole situation gets back up to a level of supporting live music, they might have just kind of aged out of it. And it reminds me of, you know, I kind of dealt with a similar thing in radio when podcasting came along, because in radio for so many years, you had guys who were audio only. So they never had to worry about like what they look like. They didn't have, there was no such thing as websites, Facebook pages, right. You know, they were anonymous, basically physically anonymous, right? People just recognized their voices. And then when, you know, at first it was MySpace, but when that came along, the dawn of social media, right. Websites came along, and all of a sudden these old radio guys were going, wait a second, what do you mean we have to maintain this whole visual presence? And wait, what is podcasting? What does that involve? Yeah. You know, a lot of those older guys had to make a decision. They had to say, okay, do I want to learn this, or do I want to just go ahead and call it a day? And I fell in this middle category where it was like, I was young enough to understand the dawning of it and to embrace it, but I was also old enough to know a day before its existence. I mean, nowadays, you know, people that have, even people who have only been working in radio maybe 5-10 years, they've never known a world without social media. So I could at least relate to. So I was right there on that edge where I had to go, no, I've got enough decades still left in this business that I need to learn how to do this sort of thing. And I think to Bruce's point, this may be kind of like what a lot of musicians are. Older musicians already had to go back to basics a number of years ago once streaming started with, okay, now we got to be DIY just like the old days. You know, we got to go back to the way that was. And to some degree, it benefited them because younger bands, you know, maybe didn't understand that so well as older bands did. But now they may have to make a similar decision of, okay, are we going to really start devoting all of our energy to figuring out how we can perform at old drive-in theaters or resident, you know, all that sort of thing? Or we're
just perform live, period.
Or exactly, because, you know, we were only maybe a year or two away from calling it a day anyway, so maybe now's just the time to do all that. It's going to be, I think, an interesting dilemma that a lot of musicians of a certain age group are going to have to factor in.
Right. I feel there is a little bit of, I will go in contradiction. By the way, if you haven't checked out Bruce Kulick's tweeting of Kiss guitar solos and little pieces of songs that he's showing people how to play, and he's just playing them live and those kind of things, it's really wicked watching him do it. It's so cool. If follow him on Twitter and you'll see all that stuff. I'm of the other mind, and this kind of goes towards, like, you know, the vocal issues that Paul's had in the past, is I was saying this, and you'll recall back when we started this podcast, I was like, what Paul needs is a year off to let his voice heal. And there's tons of people like that. Like, they need to, you know, keep warm eventually, but they need a period of time where their vocal cords can just heal. There's a certain amount of just, all you can do is rest and not tear them to pieces every other night or every single night, for, you know, that gacks people up over time. You just need, maybe you need 3 months off, but if you're older, you probably need 6 months off. And then you go back through a vocal training regimen and you'll find your way back to your voice. You just will. You know what I mean? Tissue heals. Mm-hmm. But without that break, you'll never get there. And Kiss was doing this final tour and all this stuff, and everybody was talking about Paul's, you know, diminished vocal capacity and all that bullshit. And I love that Paul's diminished vocal capacity is because he's been touring since 1973. And he's competing with people who have never sung live, who are always on tape. Like, give me a break. So
he also has one of the biggest, strongest rock voices of all time. Like, you've got to factor in you've got to factor in how much you had to lose to begin with, is what I'm saying. So, probably. If you're in a situation right now where you
sound there, Dylan, if you're Bob Dylan, nobody's missing your pithy nuances. And if you're Neil Young, nobody notices that your notes have wavered as you've aged.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, it probably wasn't so much by design back then that, hey, you know, I'm 22 now. If I just kind of stay within this more limited range, this is going to be awesome when I'm in my 70s. But it has worked out for him. I mean, it's just kind of like,
Ann Wilson from Heart, famously, when she and her sister were writing songs, she has a beautiful voice, but her range is more narrow than people know as far as keys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they sat down and she talked about this. I interviewed her. She was the first celebrity interview I ever did when I was on Talk Soup. They had me interview her for this thing. I interviewed Ann and Nancy, and they sat down and had this, okay, what chords do we play in where my voice, which is great, sounds best?
Yeah.
What's the best nest we can build for my vocal quality? In Kiss, they never did that. They just, you know, Paul found it later, mm-hmm. as his voice got better and stronger. But like I said, going back and playing the old songs screwed him up. But I will say the point I was overall making was that for all the people who might retire early because of this, there's also people who are going to have a renewed vigor because they had a rest they couldn't afford to take before, but had no choice. And just that as a gift is pretty extraordinary, you know?
Yeah, it is. And it's like a self-imposed rehab is kind of what you're talking about. And it also, you know, this is something that it's tough when it would be one thing if everybody in a four-piece band was in the same boat in terms of everybody needed to rest their voice. It's really unfair because in these scenarios, it's generally only one person. It's one person who is physically affected, and then everybody else can more or less play guitar, bass, or drums about the way that they have, with few exceptions.
Yeah, unless something bad happens, right.
Right. So, and, you know, if you're in a band full of understanding guys, then they get that. But I think the fans and it's actually good that you brought this up, because I also was going to take us to a interview that Chris Jericho had recently given. And he was specifically talking about vocal abilities of Paul Stanley and Vince Neil. He rightly acknowledged Paul Stanley as one of the greatest rock singers of all time. I mean, really echoing the points that we were just making about, you know, when you're that great for so long, it just means that you've got further to fall when you get older. Totally. But I thought he drew an interesting contrast. This interview was with Triple M Radio in Australia, by the way. He was saying that, here's his quote.
By the way, Australia, a country known for its dulcet toned rock singers.
Yeah, right. He said, speaking of singers like Paul Stanley, they're in their late 60s, early 70s, whatever it may be. If they're out there playing and doing the best they can, and there's tricks they can use to make it better if need be, I'm fine with that. This was in response to, the possibility that Paul Stanley had been using some tracks on the later legs of the End of the Road tour. And he brought up, you know, other people like, you know, Paul McCartney, for example, who I just saw live, by the way. Paul McCartney was great. You know, still just amazing. But, you know, but he compared him to Mick Jagger. And he's like, okay, Mick Jagger sounds more like Mick Jagger has always sounded than Paul McCartney sounds more like Paul McCartney has always sounded.
Right.
But there's a difference in range. Then he talked about Vince Neil. And he was more critical of Vince Neil. And I agreed with him on this point because
Paul sings all the words.
Right. Here's what he said about Vince Neil. He said, quote, "That to me is way worse, but that's always been Vince. I wish Vince would just try a little harder. And I think if this tour happens, meeting the stadium tour, I bet he will. That could be motivation to work on his conditioning a bit and maybe take some vocal lessons. I don't know, maybe on all that. But I will agree with him on, you know, I enjoy going to see Motley Crue. But you got to know what you're getting with Motley Crue, right? Which is Vince Neil, you know, it's not a technically polished performance in a lot of ways, which is fine because of all the bands for Motley Crue's purposes, because for all of the bands that were influenced by, I always think of them first when you think of bands that were influenced by like the you know, New York Dolls, the punk scene. Kiss was too earlier, but you know, it's that's kind of part of their brand. But the thing right. with Vince, it's not about vocal ability. It's about, like you said, this strange phenomenon of singing every second or third word and kind of slurring the others. And
Vince live anyways, Vince Neil at his best reminds me of Axl Rose at his worst. They both do the same thing where they just run back and forth a lot and think that covers for doing the song.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, you know, that always struck me as odd with Axl, you know, how much he runs around, considering the image put forth in the music videos about his sort of central nature in the band. Most of the videos, he's dead center on stage. There's a little bit of side crowd shots in Paradise City and shit like that, but mainly he's dead center, and he's in this realm. He's moving. He's interesting. He's physically doing stuff, but he's not just, you know, running track back and forth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And when he did that live, and I've seen them a couple of times, and I've seen Motley Crue more than that, they both do the kind of same thing where they just spend a lot of time doing crowd running,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and not enough time singing the songs. And Axl can, at certain times, manages to pace himself or something, or just runs at a slightly slower clip or something. I don't know what it is. Just works for him. Where he manages to get out all the words 80% of the time. Vince, like, after song two, if not right out of the gate, he's skipping every other word, even when they're important. Like, sometimes you see people leave out a conjunction because they know the audience is singing along. So they'll drop the and or the but or the or the, you know, those kind of moments because the audience is picking it up and they need to swallow while they're on stage or, you know, clear their throat or take a breath or something like that. I've seen this a couple of times. Like the one that stands out is Tom Kiefer singing Night Songs on one of the shows I saw. He dropped the word ain't working this job, ain't paying the bills, sick and tired of rat race, taking my thrills. Like he dropped every kind of fourth word, and it was, I remember watching it and it was kind of off-putting, you know, but you could tell he was like winded. Or something, you know, from it. And he's a skinny dude by comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So Vince, you know, and Vince has a very high voice, but it's all head voice when it works. And the problem with that is you have to keep the pipes clean. You can't have, you know, alcohol and smoking will have its deleterious effects on it, but you also can't have acid reflux. That's the biggest enemy of those kind of singers is acid reflux. Because it's so light what you're singing, how much volume you're actually making is so small. And if you're doing thinner notes that are clean, which is what he's doing, and you're not doing the Axl rasp, if you're not counting on the rasp to cover it, there was a, like I remember people talking about how Jeff Tate just does not hang out with the band, doesn't talk to people after shows, goes home, and is a dud when you're around him, mainly because he can't afford to use his voice anytime randomly because it's that, what you say, those notes are so clean, so fine, and all head voice, then he's got to bounce back and forth. It's like watching him sing, and the new singer as well, that style, Mark Slaughter does that as well. That kind of singing is like, it's so delicate. People don't recognize, you know, how much work that is. And Vince, that's where his voice is. Mm-hmm. And if he fucks around and drinks or smokes or whatever before a show, you're going to put a little grit on there that's going to bug you as the show goes on and affect your ability to hit notes. And then you're going to, you know, and then you're going to pinch, and you're going to crisscross notes, and it's going to be ugly. And that's always, you know, and that's just because he's lazy about it more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the shame of it. Whereas Paul, he's over trying is what he is. And they, you know, he's been trying to find a way to make sure he's giving the best show ever, every single time. And it's the exact opposite of the problem these guys have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think, it's an important distinction to draw. Mm-hmm.
I am looking forward to the live shows that will be occurring next year.
Yeah.
Both mid-level bands and all that kind of stuff. And I also, as an artist touring myself, I'm looking forward to my live shows, and I'm looking forward to playing with Nerd Halen and with my band 01 next year, because I really do feel like there's going to be this thing of like, you know, why do we want to stay home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep thinking of like 1930s. I was watching this woman who's 93 who has a YouTube channel with like millions of views where she cooks Depression era foods.
Hmm.
You know, she cooks, this is what we had for breakfast in the Depression. So she makes, you know, cookies out of two eggs and a pile of sand, you know. And
Is her set like a Hooverville? Like,
it's not a set. Yeah. It's her like Philly kitchen wherever she lives.
Oh, with
some, you know, hey, Tom Hebert, join us. And look at that. Just us just hanging out. Watching her do these shows, I'm thinking, you know, I think of like what people's response to when you talk about like how people who went through the Depression, how they react to shit now. They save more money. They don't let stuff go to waste. They'd save like fat in a jar. They'd compost. Just things like that came from that. They were like, don't let life go to waste, you know. And I think there's something to, after this, much like the Roaring Twenties, which happened almost entirely due to the response to the pandemic that they went through.
Yeah.
You know, people wanted to get out and have life and, you know, not be afraid anymore and all that kind of stuff. So it was, you know, it was kind of, that was their psychological response. I have a feeling that there's going to be something like that around live shows again, and mid-level and startup bands are going to have if I'm right about this, we'll have an easier time launching themselves than bands who've started up in the last 10 years, which really has favored electronic and dance-oriented stuff, where you're not really seeing the artist. You're just going to a club where they play the stuff because it's just, you know, like you would go to a disco, you know, it's disco culture.
Yeah.
And the DJs are just playing recordings of their stuff, acting like they're mixing it or making it right there, which they aren't.
Yeah. I also think that there's going to be some false starts as far as ways to approach this, which is fine. I just think it's going to be a little trial and error. Like,
sure.
I've been seeing talk about, one of the few, you know, you talk about who's done well in all this, like whose stock has gone up. Of course, everybody talks about Amazon. How about the guy that has the old dilapidated drive-in movie theater that nobody wanted to buy? Yeah. Like, now all of a sudden this guy's got a new lease on life.
Yeah, but, totally.
You know, so I thought about like that, you know, how to do that and what would a concert at a drive-in theater look like? I mean, at first, I'll tell you one thing I like about it is I guarantee you the guy in the car next to me isn't going to be spilling his beer on me. Like, that's nothing. That's a win. But I did think about, okay, if you're in the first couple of rows, that's going to probably be pretty cool. But if you're further back than that, it's not like drive-in theaters were typically, sloped or slanted because you're like a regular movie theater would be. because the screen is so elevated up and large. So unless you're putting the musical act way high up on that screen, you might end up just watching more of the video projection. And that's okay. I mean, that might be okay for the time being to start. Mm-hmm. But I think there will probably be a few things like that where we end up going, hey, remember they, for a while, somebody thought this would be a good idea or that would be a good idea. And, you know, and that's okay. I just think it's going to be like the first, you know, you ever watch those first videos of people trying to fly planes before the Wright brothers, you know, it like flies, you know, 12 feet and then collapses, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I personally genuinely think there will be a resurgence of desire for people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where they will, you know, clearly want, you know, the opportunity. It sounds like there's a pup in there with you.
There is. Yeah, Nala just, she'd had enough of being in the other room and said, I'm going to come in and see what's going on Double Neck Download. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Come here, Nala.
Hi, girl.
You want to say hi? Come here. Get up here. Yeah. Get up here on the camera so everybody can see you. Come here.
Oh, look at the big girl.
Come here. No. Come here. Come right here. Come here. Get up here. Come here. Look. Get up here. Come on. You say hi to half.
This is very secret club, Tom. Oh, beautiful.
This is Nala.
Yeah. Hi, Nala.
Nala. Mm.
Can you see? Can you hear? Look.
Nala. Look. Mm.
I think you're on headphones. So.
There we go.
She got a bell on her?
No, her tail is hitting the posts on the table.
Right, and making it ring perfectly. I just feel like I should end a meditation circle.
Yeah, It's a hardwood room, so we got to get an echo in here.
And so I'm going to sign off now, and we will, we'll revisit and have another thing. But I want to stand by my prediction, and we will check in a year from now on this one and see how this, played out. You know, like, but I really do think there will be a renewed vigor and desire. Like I said, post depression, post the, everybody was saving money. Post the 1918 pandemic, people were getting out in the streets and, you know, and gathering in gigantic crowds. That there will be a resurgence of seeing live shows again because you don't want to let life pass you by. And I think there will be. Thanks, Tom Hebert. Thanks for joining us. I think there will be a renewed respect. Ding 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 ding.
Are you hearing that? I thought I had the mic muted.
No, I heard it. Yeah. Renewed respect. I think we're going to have people are going to have a renewed respect for seeing live shows again. And I look forward to that being the case.
I think that's true. And also, a final thought for me is that I'm also liking seeing all the virtual streams and performances and things that are going on, because I think it's causing a lot of artists, because it's not just younger bands. You're seeing a lot of older art. I mean, you know, there's Sammy Hagar and, you know, the guys in his band doing streams and live performances. And I think that that's going to create a lot of new interest in music. It's going to create a lot of awareness for older artists. Yeah. And it's causing them to have to learn new technologies and approaches and things like that. So it's much like what we talked about a lot of people recording new music and getting busy with that. I think they're also going to learn the advantages of streaming, and we're all learning it because, you know, this is also, I think, for video streaming, kind of like Facebook. Like before Facebook, it was unusual for someone to have a website. You were the exception. Because Facebook is basically a one-page blog feed website for everybody, everybody's got one. Now everybody's video streaming with Zoom or whatever. You know, some of the people that were holdouts socially have now had to do it for their jobs and things like that. So everybody will emerge much more adept at, oh, yeah, of course, I know what that thing, that little camera eye is for my computer now, and I'll use it to check out live performances.
That's
sorry
right.
for uh, Nala's
never apologize for Nala. No,
she was off in her room, but she was like, "All right, well, you guys have been doing this show for the better part of an hour, and that's long enough.
My turn, right? That's right. Yeah, right. That's totally cool. All right, my brother, we will talk again soon. This is the Double Neck Download. Don't forget where you get your regular podcast. If you're not just watching it here, if you're listening to this, give us a thumbs up. Go to doubleneckdownload.com. Mm-hmm. All the links are there. You can contact us, any topics, any people you'd like us to reach out to, PR people. If you want us to talk to your person, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Cletus. Come on. Reach out to us. You're awesome, and we will see you next time.
See you soon, guys.